You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
The more I read up on Matthew chapter 10 in our current cultural reality, the more I see it for what it really is: instructions from a subversive revolutionary to his band of insurgents. Jesus is sending his followers out with the warning that they're going to face hostility, rejection, and real danger. He tells them they're going to be like sheep among wolves, a vivid reminder to us that being a Jesus follower isn't all sweetness and light. Standing up for justice can have real costs. And while this story is set in around 30 of the Common Era, it wasn't actually written down until 50 or 60 years later, after the Romans had destroyed the temple and the urban areas were occupied by soldiers in full battle rattle to intimidate the locals. Josephus even talks about Romans dressing like Jews to pass among the crowds and listen for dissension, whereupon anyone who spoke ill of Rome were either detained or stabbed to death right there in the street. Jewish society was stressed to the breaking point, turning Jew against Jew, undermining long-held customs and traditions. And now, Jewish families were being torn apart by people going over from Judaism to this crazy Galilean cult. So, even though Jesus is sending his followers out to do good, speak up for justice, care for the marginalized, and proclaim that another, more compassionate way of living is possible, he basically issues warning after warning. Get ready. You're going to be rejected. And don't think it's going to be any easier with your friends and families. It may just be worse with them. Jesus didn't hold back putting it straight to his listeners. This kingdom way of life is going to be perceived as a threat to people who are steeped in traditional us versus them thinking, and the whole you get what you deserve and you deserve what you get nonsense. They don't want to change. Even though the poor and downtrodden are suffering, things are okay for them. They want things to stay just the way they are. Now, we're only reading excerpts of Matthew 10, but if you read the whole thing, you'll see that Jesus emphasizes not belief, but on living the values of the kingdom here and now, treating people with dignity, feeding the hungry, and giving aid to the oppressed. He also gives them some very practical advice. Don't overpack your bags. Be humble and trust that doing good will open doors. If people don't respond, move on. They're just not ready. And let me just air one of my many frustrations with this passage. Fundamentalists and evangelicals completely warp this whole thing. Yes, Jesus says, look, it's not going to be smooth sailing or universal applause. People are going to reject you. And yet, this feeds into their whole victim narrative, where they think, oh, woe is me. Christians are being so oppressed. So they double down on their commitment to hate LGBTQ plus people, subjugate women, discriminate against minorities, and force their distorted Ten Commandments onto everyone. What Jesus is really saying is that challenging injustice, calling out corruption, and speaking truth to power ruffles feathers. Even small acts, sharing a meal, offering a kind word, standing up for someone who's being bullied, are participation in what is essentially a covert movement to put love, not compliance or obedience to the status quo, first. So, please note, Jesus' pep talk here is not about consenting to doctrine or reciting creeds. It's a call to be brave, be ethical, be compassionate, and be bold. He's sending his followers out as agents of positive change, trusting that even though it means discomfort or threats, standing up for the widow, the orphan, and the alien among us is what the kingdom looks like. And that's true now, more than ever.
Our words of wisdom are excerpts from Matthew chapter 10, verses 16, following the Message version.
Jesus said, "Stay alert. This is hazardous work I'm assigning you. You're going to be like sheep running through a wolf pack. So don't call attention to yourselves. Be as shrewd as a snake, inoffensive as a dove."
And don't be naive. Some people will question your motives. Others will smear your reputation. Just because you believe in me. When people realize it is the living God you are presenting and not some idol that makes them feel good, they're going to turn on you, even people in your own family.
There is a great irony here. Proclaiming so much love, experiencing so much hate. But don't quit. Don't cave in. It is all well worth it in the end. It is not success you are after in such times, but survival. Be survivors.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Join me in the Wayback Machine, won't you? We're somewhere in Europe, 450 years ago. Explorers are crossing oceans. The recently invented printing press is disseminating new ideas. Da Vinci is sketching the first helicopter and parachute. And the first globe is invented. And yet, despite their predictability, the stars above remain mysterious. But one thing everyone is absolutely certain of, the Earth is the center of everything. The sun, the planets, even the stars all revolve around us. But a Polish mathematician noticed patterns that just didn't make sense if the Earth was standing still. After decades of observation, he realized that it is only when you take the Earth out of the center and put it in orbit around the sun with the other planets does the solar system make any sense. But despite how elegant and understandable it was also decidedly heretical. Conflict avoidant, he floated hints about his discovery in a 1514 manuscript, but in a world where the church dominated all thought, he kept his revolutionary heliocentric model under wraps for the next 30 years. It was only on his deathbed in 1543 that he reckoned he was safe enough from confrontation with the authorities to actually publish his work. Even then, it was another 90 years before Galileo made his idea public. And for his trouble, Galileo was tried for heresy and spent the rest of his life under house arrest. But by then, the cat was out of the bag. And we will forever associate the astronomical revolution that followed with Nicholas Copernicus, the reluctant renegade who essentially changed the shape of the universe. Thanks to Nicholas and his Copernican revolution, humanity learned to look up and realize the cosmos is bigger, more complex, and far more dazzling than we ever imagined. Fast forward to this week and the unusually difficult time I had in pulling together what I wanted to share with you. Truth be told, I was feeling a whole new level of sympathy for Nicholas Copernicus. With celebrities being suspended, professors and administrators being fired, and with the vice president encouraging people to turn in their friends and get them fired for saying anything bad about Charlie Kirk, I had to ask myself, do I, with Copernicus, wait until my deathbed to point out the obvious truth, or do I say something now? With so many others in my position, I've struggled with the nuance of how to simultaneously condemn the political violence that took Charlie Kirk's life, while at the same time pushing back against the headlong rush of people to venerate someone whose worldview and values, while claiming to be Christian, completely betrays the message of Jesus. And to do so at essentially the same hour the world watches him being honored at a massive, presidentially attended memorial service only a few miles down the street here in Phoenix. But I've heard from enough of you who are frightened and despairing of hope that I knew I had to say something. And if I've learned anything as a pastor for nearly 40 years, it is that genuine healing from conflict only comes from being honest. So let me begin by saying and claiming what shouldn't need to be said or claimed, and that is, no one deserves to be killed for their beliefs. Free speech is a sacred bedrock principle of our democracy, even when we don't agree with the ideas being expressed. Which is why, even as many seek to raise up Charlie Kirk as a champion of free speech and the Christian ideal, I have the freedom to raise the alarm about the tsunami of praise and adoration for a person who, on virtually every point, advocated for a kind of Christianity that Jesus would simply not have recognized. Dismissive of equality, of care for the poor, of racial and gender justice, of compassion for immigrants, and even of nonviolence, all of which stand in direct opposition to everything progressive Christianity has worked toward for generations. Some of you know that I write a regular column for Progressive Christianity's Progressing Spirit page online. A couple of weeks ago, I wrote a Q&A responding to someone who said they had a problem with progressive Christianity. I started my response with, one of my problems with people who have problems with progressive Christianity is that they usually don't know enough about Christianity to know that they don't know anything about Christianity. And that's the bottom line of where we're at with most conventional American Christians right now. Most of them have been conditioned over the years into believing that what they're practicing is something Jesus would approve of. And nothing could be further from the truth. What they have managed to do, from their little country church to their massive megachurches, is to be slowly indoctrinated into what is rapidly becoming full-blown white Christian nationalism. And few have said it as clearly as my friend Kurt Struckmeyer, who describes the divide in American Christianity being between those who practice the gospel about Jesus versus the gospel of Jesus. Conventional American Christians practice the gospel about Jesus, where one's acceptability as a Christian is based solely on one's adherence to a set of beliefs, most of which are based on a literal interpretation of the Bible and the embrace of the historic creeds of the church. On the other hand, are those of us who practice the gospel of Jesus, of which our passage today is a clear expression. What does Jesus ask his followers to do? Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those with leprosy, drive out demons. Nothing about belief. And like the Beatitudes and so much of the rest of the Gospels, Jesus says, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these, you did for me." Jesus wanted his followers to do, not to believe. And every push for justice, every voice raised for equality, every hand extended in compassion is a continuation of Jesus' sacred work. And that's why what we need in Christianity is a 21st century Copernican revolution, taking the belief out of the center of Christianity and replacing it with action. And not just any action, but the action Jesus called us to be on about, caring for the outcast, the stranger, and those who are suffering, especially at the hands of religious bullies who convince their followers that their hatred and exclusion of others is condoned by Jesus. Now more than ever, the world needs progressive Christianity, a movement that embraces spiritual curiosity and honesty, a people who stand for equality, inclusion, the care of the least among us, and, it cannot be said enough, the non-violent resolution of conflict. The proponents of white Christian nationalism are depending on people like us to remain quiet, intimidated into inaction. But we are called to speak truth, even when it is unpopular, to act boldly, even when it is dangerous, and to put love first, even when we feel fear. In the NRSV version of today's passage, Jesus tells his followers, "You will be hated by everyone because of me. But the one who stands firm to the end will be saved." And as we know, the word saved is not about some cosmic reward in heaven, but about the much more immediate, earthy notion of being made whole. Friends, despite how brilliant Nicholas Copernicus was, in the end, he was a wimp. He didn't have it in him. He looked around at the situation and said, "Nope, I'm comfortable just the way things are. Best not to ruffle any feathers." What he couldn't arouse in himself, we have plenty of models for, from the prophets to Jesus to the countless other saints who have changed the world for the better, including Nelson Mandela, who reminds us, "Courage is not the absence of fear, but the triumph over it." Back in the 90s, I was part of a concerted effort on the part of over 150 Arizona clergy to make marriage equality legal in this state. Little did we know the extent of the vast right-wing conspiracy that we would be up against in that work. Much of it was manifested by conservative clergy who desperately tried to convince people, despite all the evidence to the contrary, that Jesus found homosexuality to be objectionable. And when they couldn't find satisfaction in condemning people to hell, they opted for death threats against those of us who were advocating for inclusivity. I always remember how odd it was when the detective came to my house to collect for police files the letters that I'd received from fellow Christians describing all the ways they wished for me to suffer and die. And friends, these are not evil people. They're just very, very frightened people. And they don't know what to do with their fear other than to lash out. They're afraid of people of color, of LGBTQ+ people, of changes in society that take them outside of their comfort zones. And so, this last week, we had one person who allegedly claims to have been so frustrated with the hate that he lashed out in murderous hate. And what has that wrought? More hate. So here's where we come in. Our passage today says, it is not success you are after in such times, but survival. Be survivors. Because when we survive, Jesus' genuine message of love, acceptance, and empathy survives. Our Matthew passage has Jesus warn his followers. He says that when people realize it is the living God you are presenting and not some idol that makes them feel good, they're going to turn on you. And someday, in what I fear is a distant future, people may look back and be able to see clearly that Charlie Kirk is one of those idols, a figure people have raised up to near divine status to make them feel good about their racism, their misogyny, xenophobia, and bigotry against gender minorities. But what do those who are striving to live with spiritual integrity have in the meantime? Unrelenting tension. Yes, we unequivocally denounce the murder of Charlie Kirk. No one deserves to be silenced through violence. But that doesn't mean we can't also stand firmly against the message he spent his life promoting. It's a difficult balance to maintain, but one that Jesus would want us to strive for. Because now more than ever, Jesus needs followers who have the courage to proclaim what his message is really all about. A love that transcends the noise and fear, a love that rejects violence and embraces justice, equality, and compassion, and a love that refuses to let grievance or outrage compromise the very values Jesus called us to live into. Now, more than ever, be well. Don't forget, if you liked what you heard today, buy me a coffee. The link's in the description.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.